This is an example of speech.
All our history of royalty.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blowhard evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comments section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. To listen to the archives, go to stoneduckmedia.com or tellmewhattothink.com. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis, and I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at green_weird, WYRD. This episode, we tell you what to think about the State of the Union. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think.
Financing the lives of the class of thugs. Fighting over against to sell cocaine is just incontrovertibly insane. Revocation of the old boys network. Decision signed with a shake and a smirk.
Is it, like, isn't even officially announced, right?
No, she announced.
I thought she announced that she's, like, forming the committee or something like that.
No, I thought she announced in, like, Hawaii last week with that big speech about how the intelligence community is bad, and she kept trying to hit all the high notes, but was like, regime change, war. Like, I am not actually a dove.
Yeah.
Like, we need to, like, put fucking controls and, like, gates around the military-industrial complex, but it's not going to go away in any significant form.
It was pointed out in the thread I saw you in, I can't remember her name, but that one. She pointed out, though, I didn't know this, that Tulsi Gabbard had a history of, like, kind of towing that Republican line against Obama about radical Islam and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So is she one of these people saying, like, just call it what it is. It's radical Islam. Like, that whole thing, and then, you know, because, like, the Obama people, like, were hesitant to kind of put a religious tone on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she was kind of using it for her own means to, like, I guess, differentiate herself from Obama, but, you know, it just kind of highlights why she's kind of more of a hawk than that guy.
Yeah, that's probably not what we need right now.
Nope. Seriously, we need to stop burning jet fuel at fucking insane rates.
Yeah. Well, okay, so speaking of what we need, we were going to talk this week about the State of the Union, responses to the State of the Union, maybe kind of broadly this is our response to the State of the Union and the responses to the State of the Union. So let me give a brief breakdown. There was Donald Trump, of course, the president, gave the State of the Union address, and then Stacey Abrams gave the official Democratic response or rebuttal, whatever they call it now. Rebuttal. Do they call it? Do you know which one it is? Is it response or rebuttal?
I thought it was Stacey Abrams gave a rebuttal.
See, I thought so too, but I kept seeing a response somewhere. But anyway,
I guess she didn't really. I mean, she didn't really as directly speak to this State of the Union as like other people who responded did.
Yeah, or even what others have done in the past. Now, I heard ahead of time that that was the plan, that it was more like, don't take too big of a picture. We're not getting too deep into policy stuff. It's more of like a kind of offering, you know, like Obama-like, you know, let's not get into the details, but an Obama-like, you know, this is my story. This is the story of America. This is an alternative vision, but not really into policy details. Whereas, like, so then Bernie Sanders gave one, and then you cued me earlier today that our own Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes gave the Working Families Party response. which was cool.
Yeah, and just as substantive as Bernie's, I thought.
I agree. And actually, maybe it's just because it's not Bernie saying it, it felt fresher and different.
Well, and you know,
well, not necessarily disagreeing, but just unique.
Yeah, and it spoke to us in particular because he kept bringing in the very Wisconsin examples.
He actually pointed out in the beginning, Stacey Abrams was born in Wisconsin. I did not know that.
That's cool. I mean, we are the nexus of all politics, so that makes sense.
Hashtag. So, Stacey Abrams was more like, it wasn't a broad brush policy speech. Sanders gave his kind of normal stump speech, which is that. And Mandela's was also pretty good about the issues. Like, I definitely liked that. Abrams brought up a couple things in hers. Trump, of course, did the normal presidential State of the Union thing, then with a bunch of fucking weirdness around it.
The weird threats.
And Arsenio Hall audience, like, chants and shit. Like, you know, what is happening?
Yeah.
I don't mind the kind of when he would break from his speech, because he's the worst teleprompter speech maker I've ever seen. He goes through his same like routine of like standing straight, then he turns to the side, like he steps back, turns to the side, and it's just so long and boring and repetitive. But he sort of breaks it and like almost did like crowd work in a way. Like, it almost reminded me a little bit of like a British parliamentary scene. Which I don't mind that in and of itself.
Honestly, I wish we had more fist fights.
Yeah, more of that, like shaking a rolled up piece of paper and.
All right, the senators will pick the champion of the house who will fight on their behalf.
Yeah.
Hope AOC can fence.
She can, really?
No, I hope she can.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling she's a little quicker on her feet than the majority of other members in Congress, except for maybe a couple of those like recent, special forces vets. Like, she's probably in the top 5% of athletic Congress people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go on a limb and say that. So what was your like any highlights from the speeches in terms of, I mean, nothing surprised me in terms of like policy from any of the speeches. Do you disagree?
No, it was exactly I was expecting more vitriolic immigration rhetoric from Trump.
It was better, like, polished than normal.
Yeah, like somebody gave Stephen Miller a breath mint so he wasn't just spewing garbage. But the one, it was entirely craven, I'll point out. Compare, like, even Stacey Abrams, I guess I don't have the transcript in front of me, but she at least mentioned climate change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Donald Trump also mentioned climate change in a very negative way. Didn't say it, but he said that we're going to continue pulling up as much carbon out of the ground as we can.
Yes, he did.
That's, you know, how he mentions climate change, by, yes, we're going to continue to destroy this planet. Burn it down!
Yeah, he wasn't, you know, it's really like I remember watching George W. Bush speeches, and there's a lot of people who kind of celebrate this change in politics, you know, less pretense, but like, he would say things that I don't think his administration was all in on, but he would say, like, I bet if we went through the transcripts of his States of the Union, he would at least kind of hint at, like, climate change stuff. Just to, like, say that they did it. And, of course, you know, they were, like, run by, like, oil guys and all that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's more honest. He's not going to do anything about it. He shouldn't pretend to do anything about it. But, I mean, it's fucking horrifying that the President of the United States is not worried about the end of the world.
I mean, he can afford a place in the Ark, right?
He thinks so. He thinks that his name will be on the outside of it.
Yeah.
Trump brand Ark.
But, yeah, there is a criminal...
I only have two of a kind. on the Trump Rand arc, we will have 3, 4, 5 of a kind.
And I have 5 children, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Only the most fertile.
The Venezuela thing was weak, I guess, strange.
Yeah, go on. Okay, just before you go into what Trump did, I don't recall any of the other responses mentioning Venezuela.
Nope.
Which I think is disappointing. Smart. You think it's smart?
Yeah.
Just because it's touchy?
Well, it's not touchy. It's just that it's useless. It's like
okay.
A reason to beat your chest, and like Trump used it as exactly that. He wasn't trying to find like new ideological middle ground or new ideological points that would suit his theory. He's just being a belligerent ass about it.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And so it's useless to say anything about it. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to lambast? I mean, for the left, it's a losing proposition because most people on the left agree with the value of international law. So we don't necessarily want to do, like, as Tulsi Gabbard points out, regime change wars.
Yeah.
Like, the United States has literally no business trying to decide the rightful government of Venezuela.
Yes.
And so for the left, it's a losing proposition to try to involve yourself with that because the third rail of American politics is our military. So either you're going to support the military and military action, and as I said, in the case of the left, lose most of your followers and base, or, go against the third rail of the American government and say that you aren't in favor of military action and just get laughed off the stage and off of every news network that would ever put a camera in front of you.
So does America have, and not just America, by the way, does any country that's in the Western Hemisphere have like an ethical responsibility to do something right now?
Different question than the legal
to. No, it is. It is. Yeah, I am asking a different question.
But yeah, I agree that we absolutely have some kind of ethical responsibility to respond. I mean, if technically under the UN charter, like countries like Colombia and Brazil could respond militarily if they see those massive migrant movements as destabilizing to their own country or some kind of national security threat.
Yeah, yeah.
But barring that, the United States certainly hasn't been impacted as meaningfully as those countries have been.
Yeah.
And yeah, we absolutely do have a responsibility. And one thing that the United States could do is like start paring back these sanctions that are literally starving Venezuelans to death.
Yeah. So the reason I asked that question, which is different, is because the sort of, without asking that question specifically, instead of regime change, military threats, subverting the, elected representatives, whatever, They kind of use that unspoken ethical responsibility. Well, we have to do something. They are a neighbor, to kind of like support them doing fucked up things like that.
Yeah, it's kind of emotional blackmail. They're using people's ethical and emotional response to a dire situation, and then coaxing military support for military action out of it.
Yeah, it's
disingenuous and disgusting.
Yeah, and then demonize, like, fucking socialism, which is, like, the socialism is not the problem.
Yeah, socialism is not the problem.
I
mean, if we're fucking sanctioning countries for just socialism, we got a whole lot of European countries to sanction, and not to mention we would have to start paring back Social Security and all the other great social welfare programs that make America a somewhat socialist country already.
Yeah. Or as Bernie brought up in his response, which I actually, I appreciated. This was a, he almost, it's like one of the times where I'm like, yeah, he maybe could have laid into this more. Like, a lot of times I'm like, okay, just tone it down, Bernie. Like, he's like, all with the, like, sarcasm and the rhetorical questions and, like, this is affect thing. And it's great. I mean, like, millions love it. I like it. But it's like, sometimes, it's, but on this one, I almost expected him to, like, lean in a little bit, make it a little bit more clear. But anyway, he quoted Martin Luther King, who said, and I'm paraphrasing, America has socialism for the wealthy. And what's the term?
It's rugged individualism.
Yeah, rugged individualism. Oh, love that. Great. Rugged individualism for the poor. And
rehashed Teddy Roosevelt, dude.
Oh yeah, yeah. I suppose yeah. excuse me. And that was a direct response to the like weird, again, weird, odd Trump like. Leaning in against socialism in his speech. Just like this, like, overt demonizing of it.
America.
And, like, looking at AOC and them when he did it.
Yeah, and...
Yeah.
Mm.
Is that what you're referring to, the threat stuff? Is that what you meant?
No, I was referring to, like, the fucking... We can either have... what was it?
Oh, no, okay, I know it. We can either have peace and legislation or war and investigation.
Like, those two have absolutely nothing to do with each other. Are you literally threatening? Are you making war part of this? Like, are you threatening military violence if they investigate you?
Okay.
Idiot.
So, this was, like, a really hack line by him.
There was, like,
no really agree, like, it didn't come off well. People didn't really get it in the moment. And in the kind of what you're saying, and other I've heard others sort of talk about this line, I think I actually can explain it, and I hesitate to explain what he means because I don't want it to feel like that's like I don't want to undercut that he did bad messaging for selfish purposes. Like,
is this like when Anakin started spouting Palpatine's talking points?
No, that's not what is happening. So I just kind of understand narcissistic craziness. I get what people mean when they talk like that. So what he's saying is the American people want peace and they want their government to get things done for them. So legislation. So peace, shorthand for peace, easy enough. And he's talking about he's not talking about, like, between people in D.C. peace. He means with other countries. Because he did spend time in his speech, I think, like, exaggerating, but paying lip service to wanting to get out of Afghanistan, Syria, and defeating ISIS, and... no war on the Korean Peninsula. He spent time in his speech. I don't think it was necessarily organized right to convey this peace and legislation thing, but that's what he meant. And legislation is shorthand for a functional Washington that puts out legislation that helps people. Now, granted, it's his idea of what helps people. Again, narcissistic thing. It's his idea of what helps people, which is like... You know, now a majority in the House, at least, if not a super majority, like, don't agree with him on things, because I don't think all Republicans agree with him. But anyway, and then war and investigation, so it means foreign wars and investigation of him. So he's saying that if you investigate me, it will not allow the government, it will prevent the government from being able to functionally operate within the lead. Like, he's almost, and again, this is narcissistic, what he means to say. Like, of course he's threatening. Like, you're right. He's a narcissist who's trying to defend himself, and he's threatening whatever he can to protect himself. But, like, what he's trying to say to people is, if the Congress is investigating me, they won't be working together on legislation. You can't do both, is what he's saying. And if you can't do both, then also we can't. So he's not looking at war as an active thing he would do. He's looking at peace as an active thing. He's preventing war.
War is already happening. Yes. Whether or not he's involved. And, man, oh, my God, he might have a point. Jesus Christ.
Well, about the war and peace thing, I think he might. And that's why I think no one's understanding it. Because he has a point.
It's like if the amount of time that he spends responding to these investigations and saying stupid shit on Twitter keeps him from fighting back against, you know, what we lovingly call the military-industrial complex. Oh, God.
Yeah, but he wouldn't go that far. What he would say is it prevents him from taking trips to meet with Kim Jong-un or have secret meetings with Putin about Syria. That's what he's not talking about fighting against the military-industrial complex. If you notice, I think it was mentioned on the Twitter thing we were on earlier, there's a contingent of, let's not even get into right-left, people who really dislike war, who see that in Trump. And because he sort of pays it lip service. But if you notice, he's not someone who rails against, like, it as a profiteering venture. You know, like, that the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, he doesn't see anything wrong with that part of it. Just, because he's not requesting less money for it.
He just doesn't like spending. I don't actually get his anti-war views. Like, I can't coherently tell you why he doesn't like it. That's one thing I cannot do. And I don't think he's really ever. Because really, his main thing is, like, to see beautiful, American, noble, honorable soldiers die is bad. That's pretty much his only reason. Which, to the average person, might be the biggest reason to not like war.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, more people than the soldiers die are otherwise impacted. But, yeah, okay. At least we can draw that clear moral line, huh?
But the people thinks he's talking to, his base, which I don't know if he, you know, he's not perfect. Like, even for all of his successes in politics, he's, like, even within his, like, he's not perfect within his base. And I don't know that, like, I don't think they care about brown babies in Yemen dying.
No, they literally don't care. They laugh about it online.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
That's the sort of, that's, or shit, like, if we were fucking fighting in France right now, I don't think they care about French babies dying that much. I mean, some, there are some just purely racist, where it's like, that is the only difference. Like, they do care about French children, or Ukrainian, or, you know, whatever. Right.
And some people are not racist, but purely xenophobic.
Yes, and I think there's more people that are purely xenophobic. And they think of it as, like, an honorable thing, actually. It's like putting family first. Because, hey, what does it go? God, family, and America, not necessarily in that order.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
duty, honor, country.
You know, the Earth isn't part of that saying.
Yeah.
Other peoples on the planet are not part of that saying. The environment is not part of it. Although, I think that should be all under God. But.
Mm-hmm. Like, under God, like, what is it, the first chapter of Genesis? It talks about mankind's responsibility to the environment.
And, like, hey, here's all this time I spent making the fucking planet.
You gotta take care of it. Like, I made you this really nice planet. It's gonna be yours, so just give a half of a fuck about it.
But Jesus never talked about that. Like, I made it the first chapter of the book. Did you read the first chapter? Okay. Then be an environmentalist.
Anyway.
I don't know. You start falling into a spiraling trap when you try to explain him too much because it starts getting, you know.
I don't want to think of Donald Trump as playing any dimension of chess.
No, and I...
Like, dude can't even play rock, paper, scissors.
It's only just he's defending himself, and he's saying what he thinks people want to hear. But because it's going through his own filters, it's not, even when he tries to say exactly what you want to hear, he is not empathetic enough to often correctly say the thing most people want to hear. He's just we've talked before, just super narcissist. Mm-hmm. You don't find it odd that Bernie didn't touch upon, even if he didn't say Venezuela by name? I mean, what did he even say about foreign policy? It wasn't much. He was light on it.
Barely touched it at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, he only had 30 minutes to get his set list out, so.
That's pretty, yeah, I suppose.
There were some abbreviated songs, like the Dirge of the 1%. He only played, like, half the verses.
Yeah. Although he's been having that line, because I think I saw him tweet it out, like, last week, about, it's like the top, like the five richest families or individuals.
The 25 whatever. Richest hedge fund managers made more than 140,000 fucking kindergarten teachers in this country.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's just the richest families, whatever it is, have like the same wealth as like the bottom 50% or something like that.
Yeah, and that's getting worse and worse.
All of these numbers are always so insane.
Yeah. He sounds like he's just making it up, but it's just how comically absurd the world is.
Yeah. It is kind of like a comic book writer trying to describe like a dystopia.
Like five people own like everything.
Yeah. Our intrepid hero attempts to fight the oligopoly that is America. 2019. So I don't know, any other thoughts on what was in the speeches, what was not in the speeches? Anything else that was about maybe with the president's you said he wasn't super vitriolic about immigration, but I mean he did spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah, he spent a lot of time about it, but it wasn't like his campaign hits where he's
That's true.
Yeah. You know, where he goes really into it.
Like or even last year's State of the Union.
But he's unifying, so he's not just playing to the left-hand side.
Yeah. That but was pretty
happy. Talked about this, I loved how the ladies of the House of Representatives caught him out. Like, you weren't supposed to cheer for that.
Yeah.
Obvious moment of the whole speech.
It was kind of nice, and like, Rashida Tlaib had kind of like... interacted back with him. Now, my partner thought that he was trying to sort of take credit for the most women ever in elected office or the House or whatever it was. I don't think he was actually really taking credit for it, except simply beyond the fact that, like, I'm the CEO of this company called America, and this happened while I was CEO. But even he's not narcissistic enough to, like, make an overt case for his responsibility for that. Even though he's the one person who maybe is responsible.
Yeah, Marge arguably could take credit, but won't, because that's not politically viable.
Yeah, he's like, if I wouldn't have said, grab him by the pussy, we would not have...
so many female representatives. But, dude, none of them are Republicans, so... And how many of these women did you actually endorse, so...
Yeah.
You're on the side of the problem, and that's why you can't really follow that political line, because paints himself into a corner.
Yeah, even he has limits to shame. And
like he does apparently feel shame.
Yeah, occasionally. But the immigration stuff was... I don't know. I mean, it was... You know, he did say, though, he made a big thing about, unless I misheard, but it got a big applause line and everything, was promoting legal immigration, which I don't really remember him doing.
Yeah, it's throwing a bone to the rest of Congress. Like, even the Republicans and their special interests require immigration to a certain extent.
Oh, for sure. Farmers and all that, and mm-hmm. meatpacking, and yeah. Or shit, his own businesses, you know, clubs and restaurants. And,
arguably, the one thing that I think the Democrats need to do, and probably should have been part of their speeches last night, should have been to, like, we are going to expand workers' rights to everyone who draws a paycheck in the United States, regardless of immigration status.
Yeah.
Work for the United States, you cannot be, you know, robbed for... and otherwise exploited in, like, meatpacking facilities, agricultural places, you know, the places that love using immigrants for how little they'll fucking get, how much they're willing to work for.
Yeah, that would, I mean, so why, so they don't want this because it's a loophole where they don't have to worry about the rights of their labor, or...
Nobody would need... It would be too upsetting to change the system. It would, that would require a massive expansion of labor rights.
Yeah.
And hell, if illegal immigrants can unionize, that's... Jesus.
Well, I mean, Chavez was... Cesar Chavez...
Yeah, was successful in it, but...
Yeah.
In the 60s.
To an extent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Generations ago.
Decades ago. But yeah, but that's the problem with the Democrats that I see in coming up into this, is that they're trying to differentiate themselves with each other and not put their foot in their mouth or their feet in their mouth, so they're not coming out with any new ideas. Like, okay, so the Green New Deal is an exception, but that, again, not exactly new, and it's been basically what everybody's been crying about for a decade. But even there, you don't have any party coherency, because Nancy Pelosi herself dismissed it as, like, the Green Dream or whatever. So, yeah, that tells you...
Dreams aren't bad.
Hmm?
Dreams aren't bad.
Yeah, but to call the Green New Deal a Green Dream and act like she doesn't know what it's about is just...
Well... I mean, when you read... It's like, if you read movie scripts all day, you know, finished movie scripts, and you're a producer, then someone's like, okay, I have a pitch for an idea. It's just like Lethal Weapon, but with Muppets or something like that. It's like, that's not really like a fully fledged idea, and I'm not trying to dismiss it, but it's like, even Mark Pocan in the Q&A I went to was like, look, there's no, like, on paper... complete package yet. That, like, it's not a thing that any legislature should be wholeheartedly saying, yes, I am for everything in this, because there's no this to that.
That's a fair point, but then why isn't there? I mean, again, we've been crying for...
Yeah, no, fair enough.
And you said, like, yeah, AOC has been on it since she got elected. Since she got won her primary, basically. Yeah.
If I recall, I saw from AOC that there would be actually something more of substance coming very soon.
That's good.
Like it's I can't remember, you know, the ins and outs of and the jargon she used for what stage it's at and all that. But there was some sort of concrete step coming very shortly. I think to kind of some of those, you know, technocrats who just like only see things in the black and white of text on a piece of paper, maybe some of those could be turned soon. I don't know. I hard to say. I certainly think that if they put out something that's, you know, like people like Pocan or whomever, you know, something where... people who aren't really part of drafting it, but who are fairly liberal on climate change, can have something to say, like, to point to specific policies. Like, for example, in the Green New Deal, there's this new job thing that blah, blah, blah. And, you know, give them something to talk about in speeches, committee hearings, things like that.
Right. And that needs to happen, like, yesterday.
Yeah. I'm curious, though. I've never heard this idea of a bold yet broad thing like a New Deal program for climate change. I mean, I guess I've heard people say we need big, broad solutions, but this seems to be to have a little bit more to it, like just the ideas I've heard thrown around by Cortez and others seem more concrete to me now than I'd heard in years past when, like, I knew the climate was changing and that was terrible. But
yeah, now people are actually talking about the scale of effort necessary to, you know, affect change.
Yeah, that's kind of like the dip where it's like, this is the type, like, just putting New Deal in it, I think gives people an idea of, like, what we're talking about, like, in terms of scale.
Yeah. This is going to be, like, World War II era, like, what's the word I'm looking for? The scale of preparation for World War II, the whole country is going to have to be turned on a head almost. Massive changes to energy and infrastructure and, again, how we live our lives. I've said this point repeatedly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... It feels like there hasn't been a lead from the government on... And for very good and understandable reasons in some ways. But like a government-led change in the way people live their lives in a long time.
Since the New Deal, basically.
Yeah, I was trying to think about this. So the New Deal, so the Depression, World War II. Definitely had that. I feel like there's some of it, though, in the 50s with, like, GI Bill. But I don't know, maybe you can say that's an extension of what was kind of already going on in some ways. Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel as if there's anything like this in our lifetime.
No, certainly not.
I'm trying to think if there'd be, if we'd point to a government sort of led effort.
I guess the 60s, maybe?
Yeah, most people don't. That doesn't touch most people's lives.
Yeah.
I mean, it touches a lot of people's lives, but I think what this is talking about is that no one, even if you pretty much lived your life notionally the same, you would see changes around you. Clearly changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the world would feel and look different. And, you know, like something innocuous, like, seemingly innocuous, like there was a short time frame on exhaust from cars, like on like the machinery of how that gets done, like mm-hmm. changes and has to change fast. Mm-hmm. And maybe even cars had to get retrofits. And all of a sudden cars everywhere in the country have this different thing on the back. Within 3 years.
Well, the cell phone plug. That's an easy example, maybe.
Yeah, but it was that government-led.
Yeah, like, remember when back in the day when every mm-hmm. cell phone had a different power cable, and then all of a sudden the Congress was like, no, USB. That shall be the standard.
I didn't know they did that. Okay, that's interesting. That's cool.
And everybody could use the same power cord.
See, but I thought Apple doesn't.
Well, Apple doesn't, but they are always trying to keep themselves outside of any box.
Well, so how do they get out of this? They're just like...
It's an exception.
These aren't cell phones, they're dream phones.
Yeah, that's basically the exception, yeah. It's not exactly a cell phone, it's like, okay, buddy, that's...
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm not trying to downplay governments, like federal government's role in our lives... But I'm just saying, like, some sort of, like, bold, the world's changing, we have to change, or else type thing, which is essentially kind of what we need government for. It just shouldn't happen all the time.
Hmm. Well, the government's role is, like, basically implementing what people think of as a better way, right? Still requires the individuals and the government to, like, bring forth the policies and bring up these ideas. And get everybody to agree that it's a good enough idea that the government should implement it. So,
Yeah, yes and no. And I don't know which is like kind of morally right, because so like the New Deal, FDR was elected, and I'm no expert on his campaign in 1932, but he was elected to do essentially what he did. People expected that. They knew what they were voting for. He also was able to get his party to get big congressional gains over the time as well. But so if we cut to like right now, are most Democratic voters, do they want climate change? I think the answer is, or sorry, want to do something about climate change? I think the answer is yes, but I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure at least 51% would say that yes, we have to do something, but you'd only get like single digit percentage points on individual policy planks.
Or even maybe like it's not the top of everyone's list.
Mm-hmm.
Which something as a great Green New Deal can only be done if it's a high priority.
Mm-hmm. It's going to require a lot of political capital.
Yeah.
But yeah, and other people would, and justifiably, I guess, are in favor of voting rights legislation and criminal justice reform and, you know, reforming the Department of Defense. But those don't keep us from extinction, I guess. Is my priority.
Department of Defense might disagree with you on that one. Department of Energy.
I mean, yeah. But the fact that we're burning so much jet fuel is just causing us to become extinct faster, so probably not. The reforms wouldn't go the way that they would want.
Yeah. Did you see, we're getting a little off topic of the State of the Union, but I think this is kind of like I would have liked to have seen a major climate change platform put forth in any of the rebuttals.
Any of them.
And it didn't really happen. I think that, it's kind of one of these things. I think Stacey Abrams, if she was elected to Senate, would vote for something along those lines, give or take policy here or there. But, I don't know, in her speech, she didn't make a huge deal out of it. But along these lines, though, of what you're bringing up of oil and natural gas interests sort of having a hand in the legislating process. Did you see the AOC's like 5-minute questioning of government ethics experts?
Oh yeah, Walter Schaub and company.
Yeah. That was the I cannot think of any committee questioning I've ever heard as good as that. And I'm not saying it's never happened. There's been a lot of it. Thousands and thousands of hours. But that was fucking good.
Yeah, it was very approachable.
And she got essentially yes and no answers out of them.
Mm-hmm. Which is rare enough.
I mean, that's not someone seeking like a... It's not like an appointment type hearing where the people are kind of defensive. But nonetheless... Yes and no answers, created a hypothetical that was understandable.
So they couldn't weasel out of.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know that they necessarily intended in weaseling out. I didn't catch who they all were. I just knew Walter Schaub. But,
yeah, it's... I'm glad that somebody in government is making government more approachable and understandable to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of, I don't know what the purpose of that hearing exactly was for, but it seems HR1, like,
isn't it?
I was going to say, it seems like a great, it's relevant to HR1.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've really been, okay, maybe let's end with this. So, I think the number one sort of threat to way of life, sort of existential, practical threat, and not even, like, flip side, opportunity for America is climate change here. And what we've been talking about. But I've been debating whether or not that should take precedence over political reform. Or, like, if you can ever do it without political reform. So, like, broadly speaking, H.R. 1, but not necessarily limited to the reform.
Just getting money out of politics kind of idea.
Yeah, getting more representative of the people, less gerrymandering, more reliable elections. Just kind of across-the-board political reform, which is so upsetting. It should be so upsetting to kind of everyone. Of course, it's not. But even in, like, conservative areas, I often see polls that are like, do you think political parties should be able to gerrymander districts, terribly. And, one-party states like Utah and shit will have things like nonpartisan committees doing that, or, some sort of process for it.
Right, because America was supposed to be built on fairness and equality, right? And if it's not fair, it's not equal.
Yeah. So, I don't know, what do you think? Do you think political reform, like the political question, has to be addressed first, or in conjunction, or can be done later?
I guess it can't be, now, when you present it like that. I mean, we just have to get the money out of the way. Because these oil companies have built huge masses of political and, financial fortunes that they can put in the way of any progress or movement on climate change. And arguably, from an asshole businessman's perspective, that should mean that should be the death knell of all of these companies. Their stocks should be trading in the fucking penny market for their inability to adapt to the reality of the world.
Yeah.
Like, energy companies could be pouring money into research and development and finding a way to power this whole scheme of theirs without using carbon fuels, battery technology, geothermal, solar, wind, whatever you want, whatever it is, so long as it keeps the carbon in the ground. But instead, they're expending all of their money on continuing this carbon model and expending all of the aforementioned fortune in perhaps the ultimate manifestation of the sunk cost fallacy.
Mm. Yeah. It just seems to be like there has to be...
Something's got to give.
Yeah. Because, your immediate reaction was, they're burning all this jet fuel, the oil... The fuel people are, never going to allow legislation that would affect that. Or at least they'll fight tooth and nail against it. And so it's like, okay, well, why do they have a say? Let's figure out a way to get them at least less, more out of the picture, if not completely.
Yeah, less involved.
Yeah, less involved would be nice. Bringing up energy companies... that's a little bit of a double speak thing, isn't it? Like energy companies, like that's implying that they like are open to wind and solar.
Well, some of them at least make pretenses that they are, but yeah, it's not widely adopted. I'm talking like ExxonMobil, like
no, that's what I'm talking about too.
Yeah, Rosneft. Like other countries, like other national oil companies deserve just as much scorn for. Again, the inability to adapt to circumstance.
Yeah, it's not just an American thing. Mm-mm. I think this is one of those examples, though, that people would point to that if America had been or was currently leading, like this is the type of thing that in people's idealistic exceptionalist view of America America should lead on.
Yeah, I've been saying it since at least we were in college that this, if we create an America that everyone wants to live in, then, in every economically, culturally, and politically, we ultimately will win because people will be buying our technology and trying to copy our way of life.
Yeah.
So if we establish like a new environmental standard that is the envy of the world, then it only benefits America.
Yeah, which, I mean, like, America has done before. I mean,
the car?
Well, I mean, in terms of, like, environmental stuff, but yes, also. You know, like, but just, like, national parks weren't as much of a thing. That was a model set up. And then, you know, environmental groups from America started spreading around the country. Not that there weren't people who were environmentalists. Some places were like, yeah, we...
Mm-hmm.
We've never done that stuff, but you know, I just think it's a way that America could lead, especially being able to adapt it to a like consumer based capitalist society. Like it just pisses me off that like this is one of my fundamental gripes about like modern politics is that the capitalists don't try harder to sustain their system.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just like it's such like you guys could still, you and your people could still be the rich people for fucking ever if you just made reform and compromise, like changes, kept with the times, had ethical standards. You know, and granted, it's not going away anytime soon, but like, I don't know, like, they keep letting the foundation crumble.
Yeah. Because it's too short-sighted because of this profit motive. Yes. There's no need for even medium-term planning.
Yes. I totally agree.
How are we going to continue to source our product in 20 years if the natural environment no longer allows us to gather the product and, you know, raw materials that we need? That seems like something that should be addressed in their business model.
For sure, for sure. So, conclusion. It seems to me we're in agreement that climate change should have been a bigger component of all of the speeches. And, I think that's
a good rebuttal.
There should be like a climate change, just climate change rebuttal.
And just go point by point with Trump and what he was talking about and how it affects climate change.
Yeah, I mean, you really could tie it. I mean,
Immigration. Because of our continuing environmental destruction, we are making Central and South America less inhabitable than it previously was, which is encouraging, you know, civil strife, civil unrest, and civil war in certain parts of, again, Central and South America.
Healthcare,
yeah.
Super tied into healthcare.
For instance, people with asthma and other, shall we say, breathing disorders in, I guess, the entire country are going to start suffering even more problems.
Foreign wars. It's tied in with that.
Yeah, everything.
I'm trying to think what else he... I'm trying to think if there are any other big points in Trump's speech about that we can tie. I'm not sure how a Green New Deal ties in directly with investigations of President Trump.
Yeah, that one's a little harder to make, but...
See, I don't think we explicitly said this when we were going over his little rhyme there. The main thing that's the problem with what he's saying, it was by whether the kind of interpretation I was trying to give or what most other people think of it, is that they can totally chew gum and walk at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, they can't spend the full amount of their time. I mean,
they could probably walk, chew gum, and tweet at the same time.
And call up donors, so...
Well, not if they're independently financed.
No.
Support your local representative, $27 at a time.
So, alright, well, that was our State of the Podcast episode. Actually, I didn't talk about podcasts. the podcast of the Union. I don't know. That was our talk about states and unions. This has been Tell Me What You Think. Find us on the Twitter at BlurredNemesis, at Green_Weird, WYRD. Tell Me What You Think Facebook page. TellMeWhatYouThink.com for archives and find us on Stitcher, Apple, and the Google Podcast. And email us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. Alright, Charles, you have a good week.
You too. Have a great weekend.
Alright, later.
Today's it's sunny, today's it rains. Destroy the myth and we'll break our chains. Break your chains!